Hey there! If you got a sec, I just want to let you know of this brand new freebie that I made with you in mind in order to make your life a whole lot easier. It's called the Top 17 Anti-Inflammatory Kitchen Swaps. It's a list of everyday kitchen items that you currently use and what you should replace them with in order to build a healthier and more anti-inflammatory meal and kitchen oasis. No more overwhelm in a confusing world of food choices. No more staring at ingredients labels trying to decide what's good for you. No more Google search rabbit holes trying to figure out what you should be eating and cooking with in order to support your health. I've got you covered. My freebie is straightforward and tells you to replace this with that. All you have to do in order to grab your free copy is head over to betterwithcarbo.com/swaps. That's betterwithcarbo.com/SWAPS. Can't wait to hear what you think. When these chemicals are applied to the crops, they can enter the soil and then be taken up by the plant's roots. And then as the plant grows, it incorporates these chemicals into its tissues. This means that when you're washing the outer layer of produce, it might remove some of the surface level residue, but it won't necessarily reach the chemicals that have been absorbed and integrated into that plant itself as it grew. I'm Chrissy Carbo, registered dietitian and host of the Inflamed in the Brain podcast. Here we cut through the confusion and complexity of inflammatory health to deliver straightforward, bite-sized strategies and information you can easily apply to your life. Not too long ago, I was lost in a sea of information, overwhelmed by the challenges of inflammation. But through years of trial, education, and self-discovery, I learned to break free from the chaos of fad diets and cultivate a practical anti-inflammatory lifestyle that not only helped me stabilize my own diagnosis, but thrive with it. Whether you're an autoimmune warrior or simply seeking a healthier, uncomplicated life, you found your tribe. Join me as we explore realistic strategies that can make a profound difference in your life. So if you're ready to embrace a simpler, healthier way of living, you're in the right place, my friend. Let's dive in, learn, and grow together. Welcome to the Inflamed in the Brain podcast. Let's get started. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Inflamed in the Brain podcast. I'm Chrissy, your host and friendly neighborhood dietitian, and I'm really happy you're here today because we are settling the debate about organic versus inorganic fruits and vegetables, which is better, and what happens if you can't afford to eat organic produce. There's been some controversy and wild accusations being made out there with Bill Gates and his involvement with this company called Apeel Sciences. And apparently, these guys make edible food coatings that go around fruits and vegetables in order to keep them fresh for a longer period of time. And these coatings are made from monoglycerides and diglycerides. And the crazy thing is that people are out there saying that Bill Gates is trying to poison our food supply. Now, to be clear, monoglycerides and diglycerides are types of fat. And naturally, they occur in products like olive oil, coconut oil, animal fats, and dairy. However, the food industry creates these fats synthetically and uses them as emulsifiers in our packaged foods. They help with preventing oil separation and they extend shelf life. So, you know how peanut butter, the oil always floats to the top? Well, Skippy might use these fats in order to keep the oil from rising to the top so you're not like stirring the peanut butter like a crazy person. Same thing with salad dressings. So these fats could be added to these salad dressings in order to maintain a smooth consistency and keep the oil and vinegar from separating. Now, the FDA does say that these additives are generally considered safe, although the specific foods you might find them in may not be so great for us, but the FDA says that these additives are considered safe to eat. And Bill Gates and this company that he's connected with are using these fats in order to keep produce fresh for a longer period of time as a way to increase food accessibility. And I get the concern and the need to fix food accessibility in certain parts of this country and around the world. But after digging into all of this myself and forming an opinion, I kind of think there are two different conversations sort of being tangled into this whole Bill Gates thing. One, if the discussion is how to solve food accessibility and the hunger crisis, this is a pretty great technological advancement here. When you're hungry or food is in short supply and you're looking for an apple or something like that, I wouldn't expect someone to go, no thanks, the apple's not organic, I'm not going to eat it. If you're hungry or if food is scarce, you're going to eat an apple regardless of how it was grown, right? But if the conversation is about health and what would have a more positive impact on our health, the best choice is often foods that are in their most natural state. Like, think about it for a second. Historically, in this country, foods that undergo extensive human intervention through processing and certain farming practices tend to be the foods that are more problematic for our health. And that's why I thought it would be a good idea to talk about the difference between organic and inorganic foods and what happens if you feel like organic foods are a better option for you to eat, but you can't necessarily afford them. Because let's be honest, organic foods are more expensive than not organic foods. So in this episode, I'm going to lay out the facts so that you can make a well-informed decision for yourself. But we're going to also keep some things in perspective too, because again, I know organic produce may be a bit costly at times, but there is a way to navigate it. So let's dive into it and discuss what organic and inorganic really means, what impact do they have on our health and the environment, and how should you be making the best choice for you? So let's start off with the first question, the most obvious question: what's the difference between fruits and vegetables that have been grown organically versus those that have grown conventionally or inorganically, if that's even a word? And just for the sake of this conversation, and I think in general context, anywhere you read this, conventionally grown means inorganic or non-organic or not organic, however you want to say it. The main difference between organic and conventional fruits and vegetables comes down to how they're farmed. Organic farmers rely on natural techniques to grow crops, and they steer clear of synthetic chemicals and genetically modified organisms, aka GMOs. The use of GMOs in food and their potential effects on our health is a whole separate conversation altogether, but organic farming standards prohibit the use of GMOs. So any crop, ingredient, or even livestock that are used in organic products, they cannot be genetically engineered or derived from any kind of genetically modified sources. Lots of people also think that organic means no pesticides, but organic farmers may actually use natural pesticides and herbicides. Natural meaning that they are made from plants or minerals. They may also use animals for pest control. So recently, I've been seeing a lot of conversations, or more like videos that are coming up on my TikTok feed, about wolf spiders and how they're used to eat bugs that may damage the cranberry crop. Like, you know, those commercials for cranberry juice with the farmer standing in that flooded cranberry field. So apparently these scary looking wolf spiders are being used as a way to manage pests in these fields. But the crazy thing is that when you're harvesting the cranberries, the farmers or the harvesters that are collecting these cranberries may actually be bitten a few times by these spiders, which is pretty bizarre. But anyways, organic farmers may also use other animals to help with pest control. Organic farmers are also putting a lot of effort into keeping the soil healthy with practices like composting, rotating crops, and plant cover crops. So this approach also helps keep the soil in good shape, and it fends off pests and diseases without relying on those synthetic chemicals. Conventional farmers use synthetic chemicals to grow crops faster and in greater quantities. So farmers apply pesticides, herbicides, and fertilizers to keep pests at bay and also to boost plant growth. So the goal here with non-organic farms is more produce in a shorter amount of time. The next question is then, okay, so those are the differences between organic and conventionally raised produce, but which is healthier for you, if there even is a nutritional difference. So nutritionally, like the food itself, I don't think that there is a nutritional difference, but there's a lot of concern about the potential risk of eating foods that have been grown with pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides, and how they affect our health. There is some research out there that shows that pesticides contain chemicals that can trigger inflammation or even exacerbate inflammation or make it worse. And this causes a domino effect of health issues. So with herbicides, these are designed to kill weeds. And herbicides often contain a chemical called glyphosate. Glyphosate is a widely used herbicide, and it's commonly known as the active ingredient in Roundup. And Roundup is a product that's made by Monsanto. And you can find Roundup at your local grocery store or Home Depot or Lowe's. And there's a ton of controversy around glyphosate and concerns for health risks, including claims that glyphosate actually causes cancer. I actually remember all of this stuff being in the news back when I was in school studying nutrition. But in 2015, the World Health Organization's International Agency for Research on Cancer, that's a mouthful, said that glyphosate is probably carcinogenic, which sent everyone in this insane uproar, and there were like a whole bunch of lawsuits against Monsanto. But regulatory agencies in the United States, including the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, considered glyphosate safe when it's used as directed. I actually think there's a documentary about this on Netflix, or at least there was one on Netflix. But needless to say, there are still a lot of ongoing questions and debates and mixed scientific findings, which in my opinion, I think there's a lot of cherry-picking data involved here when it comes to this whole glyphosate issue. But a lot of this debate and fighting on whether glyphosate is safe or not is still very much alive. And if you ask me for my opinion, if there's a question of safety, might as well not use it, right? So like if it's even a question, or if there's even a trend where we're seeing that Roundup or people who have used Roundup, like employees in these big farming companies, now have cancer because of using Roundup. If it's that kind of a question, we should just stop using it altogether. But more specifically, there are studies out there that say that glyphosate may disrupt your gut microbiome. And we need a healthy gut microbiome for digestion and immune function. And when that's disrupted, it can lead to inflammation and chronic inflammatory diseases and autoimmunity. Fungicides, which are used to prevent fungal infection on crops, they also contain heavy metals and other toxic compounds that can build up in your body over time. And these accumulations often lead to chronic health problems, including inflammation and even certain types of cancer. Even after washing your produce, there are traces of pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides that can still be present. And over time, these residues can accumulate in the body, again, leading to more inflammation and other health issues. And this kind of leads us into the next question, which is, okay, does washing your produce get rid of pesticides? Everyone usually washes their fruits and vegetables before they eat them, which is generally a good best practice. But when it comes to removing pesticide residue, it's a bit more complicated. Washing your fruits and vegetables alone doesn't always eliminate all pesticide residues from conventionally raised crops. For the most part, pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides are designed to be absorbed by the plant or stick around the outer layers of the plant in order to protect it from pests and diseases. And when these chemicals are applied to the crops, they can enter the soil and then be taken up by the plant's roots. And then as the plant grows, it incorporates these chemicals into its tissues. This means that when you're washing the outer layer of produce, it might remove some of the surface level residue, but it won't necessarily reach the chemicals that have been absorbed and integrated into that plant itself as it grew. Some pesticides even are designed to be systemic, meaning that they travel throughout the plant's entire system from roots, leaves, and fruit. These systemic pesticides are particularly challenging to get rid of while you're washing, because like I said, they're kind of just like built within the plant. Like when you put milk in coffee, you can't take the milk out once you've added it in. It's pretty much integrated into the whole thing. One thing that you might be able to consider, though, is cooking your produce. So one study from 2002 showed that pesticide residue was reduced in foods when it's been heated, aka when you're cooking it. But it varies between the food and the cooking method. They actually tested this theory with Chinese kale and long yard string beans, and residues after these foods were boiled, blanched, or stir-fried. And these cooking methods did reduce chemical residuals, but again, it varied by the food and the actual cooking method. So the most effective at reducing pesticide residuals in Chinese kale was blanching. And when the Chinese kale was blanched, the residuals were decreased by 36 to 100%, which is pretty wide range. And for the yard-long green beans, boiling was the most effective at reducing pesticide residuals by 38 to 100%. So something to consider. And finally, is organic food better for the environment? Short answer, yes. The synthetic chemicals that conventional farmers use contaminate soil and water. And what happens when these pesticides and fertilizers are used is that they run off into lakes and rivers, and it'll harm the fish that live in those lakes and rivers, and then other wildlife that drink from the water and maybe eat the fish. So it's like this domino effect of how these synthetic chemicals can affect biodiversity. These chemicals also can degrade soil over time, which reduces the soil's fertility, but also, again, you're harming the biodiversity. And because organic farming practices avoid synthetic chemicals and use more natural farming methods like crop rotation, composting, and biological pest control, which, again, is like a fancy term for using animals as bodyguards. Think wolf spiders in cranberry fields. These kind of methods are more natural, and they help keep the soil healthy without introducing harmful chemicals, and it supports a wider variety of plants and animals, and it creates a more balanced ecosystem. With all of this being said, is it better to go organic? Yes. But obviously, there's some things you got to consider, like costs. Usually, people don't buy organic produce because it's more expensive, and this topic kind of brings me back to my grandfather, who would honestly get mad if people talked about buying organic, or if like my parents brought him organic produce instead of regular produce. He thought it was a waste of money, or that you were falling victim to a government scheme to get more money out of you. So some people actually fall into that category, that babikike category, where you think that buying organic means that you're a sucker to the government. And then some people think that organic food is more expensive because it's healthier for you. But honestly, I don't think that it's more expensive because of any of those reasons. I just think that it's more expensive because of the farming practices that are required to raise organic produce. Typically, organic fruits and vegetables require a lot more attention, care, and labor to grow. Without the use of synthetic chemicals, farmers usually have a smaller yield with crops because they're more susceptible to damage and animals eating them and things like that. So when you're at the supermarket and you're looking at a piece of fruit or vegetable that is organic and you do see that it is more expensive, you want to consider the labor and the attention and care that it took to raise that crop. If it took you a lot of time and energy and work to raise something, you wouldn't sell it for cheap, right? So it's kind of like that same kind of thought when it comes to buying organic anything. But if you are looking to buy organic and you're on a budget, there are a couple of things that you can consider. One of those things being you can buy organic seasonal produce. When produce is in season, there's usually a surplus of that food, both from organic and conventional farms. And they tend to be fruits and vegetables that go on sale at the supermarket. So not only is buying seasonally more affordable, but the produce actually looks a lot better. Like if you've ever seen strawberries in December, it's expensive and the berries actually look really sad. So buying seasonally also can save you some money if you are looking to buy organic produce. Another thing you can do to buy organic on a budget is to buy produce according to the Environmental Working Group's Clean 15 list and Dirty Dozen list. The Clean 15 highlights conventionally raised fruits and vegetables with the least pesticide residue. So these are considered safest to eat if you buy them conventionally, because they've been shown to have the least amount of pesticide residue after washing and processing and things like that. And then the Dirty Dozen identifies produce with higher pesticide levels after processing and washing. So this list emphasizes which fruits and vegetables you should be buying organic because they have higher levels after all of the washing and processing and things like that. So I'll link to both of these lists in the show notes if you are interested in taking a look. And since we talked about how cooking food may decrease the amount of pesticide residue, one thing that you could do is buy produce that you're going to eat raw, organic, and then whatever else you're going to eat, like cooking, like broccoli, zucchini, whatever, you can buy that conventionally raised, considering, again, that applying heat and cooking the produce might actually remove some of those residual pesticides. If you are going to buy organic, what should you be looking out for? So the gold standard here is the USDA organic label. And it's considered the gold standard because the USDA has some pretty strict standards, including like soil testing, inspections. And if you are buying stuff with the USDA organic label, you can be sure that these things are grown without synthetic pesticides, herbicides, or GMOs, and that it follows environmentally sustainable practices. At the end of the day, though, even though organic fruits and vegetables are preferable for your health and the environment, if they aren't within the budget, if your budget doesn't allow it right now, that isn't a reason to not eat fruits and vegetables. Conventionally raised fruits and vegetables are still packed with essential vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants that support your health and reduce inflammation. Plus, they play a key role in your body's natural detox systems, which will help you flush out everyday toxins that you might not be able to avoid. So even though the purpose of this episode is highlighting why organic is a better option for your health, at the end of the day, eat the damn apple. You're still going to get the same kind of nutritional health benefits. If you found this episode valuable, please comment, leave a review, and share with someone who might also find this valuable. Let me know what you thought of the episode. You can send me a message on Instagram. I'm at BetterWithCarbo. And don't forget to subscribe so that you aren't missing out on any of our anti-inflammatory goodness conversations. I'll catch you next time. Same time, same place.